You might arrive by water. You could actually paddle over, arrive at our dock, greeted by a beautiful willow tree and some wonderful white pines, and walk up to the new museum. And then you're coming inside to this beautiful, warm wood interior that has mass timber and cross-laminated timber columns in it. So this like real rich wood feel. And this is the new home, the home of the canoes.
Right near the entrance to the collection hall is a rugged old dugout canoe that was pulled out of the mud. Cottager was putting in a new dock, thought they'd found a log that needed to come out, but it was pointed at both ends and hollowed out in the middle, and it's probably in the 200, 250-year-old range. Incredible histories in the landscape everywhere that poke up and show people have been here for centuries or millennia, and this has been the means of getting around.
That's Jeremy Ward and Carolyn Hislop. Carolyn is executive director of the Canadian Canoe Museum. Jeremy is the museum's curator. As the Canoe Museum moves into its stunning new home along the Otonabee River in Peterborough, Ontario, they are our guests on this episode of Explore, a Canadian Geographic podcast. Welcome to all you explorers out there, armchair and in motion. I'm your host, David McGuffin. It is most definitely canoe season again. Early May is one of my favorite times to go paddling. It's getting warm, the bugs aren't out, at least not yet, and more so than summer, it's easy to enjoy privacy and quiet wherever you go. The higher waters from snowmelt also mean you can get into places with your canoe that might be inaccessible later in the year. In my own lake, I take advantage of getting into the swamp behind one of the islands at the far end from where we live. That swamp is slowly and effectively being silted up by a number of beaver dams, which now almost completely connect island and shore. This time of year, though, you can still glide over sections of dams, bottom scraping on mud and branches. That then gets you into a quiet oasis of lily pads, reeds, cattails, and grasses, the trill of red-winged blackbirds, the early croaking of spring peepers. I follow the beaver's own well-cleared cut path through the lily pads, paddling or poling in the muddy bottom. In the distance, the beaver slaps its tail, an announcement to its neighbors that I've arrived. A blue heron launches from a cedar on the island, slowly loping wing beats before settling on a dead branch further away, eyeing the water for fish. I'll stop and sit and just take it all in for minutes, tens of minutes, longer. This is peace of mind. And that's one of my own memories of being out in a canoe. I'm sure most of you listening have your own and can conjure it up in your mind right now. As Canadians, no matter our origins, because of our geography, because of our history, canoes are woven indelibly into our psyche, which is why I'm really thrilled to have Carolyn and Jeremy here today to talk about canoes, canoeing, and the new Canadian Canoe Museum. It holds the largest collection of canoes and kayaks and humid-powered watercraft in the world. Some of them, First Nations birch barks, hundreds of years old, canoes from the fur trade, whaling canoes, canoes from the early days of cottaging and recreation. All of it is displayed in a way that transports you in time to places on water, paddle in hand. So let's push off from shore and get this conversation going. Carolyn and Jeremy, welcome to the Explore podcast.
Thank you, David. Really excited to be here.
Thank you, David.
Well, it's great to have you both here, and I've met with you both in the past, and Jeremy very kindly took me on a great tour of the old building, which was in the old outboard marine factory, and there's elements of that place that I loved. I loved the canoes kicked out the gas engines and replaced all that and replaced that vibe. Obviously, you guys have been pushing towards this new building, which just, it looks absolutely incredible, and I'm just wondering, Carolyn, we'll start with you. Can you just describe what people will see as they come to the new building? And what's the inspiration behind that design?
Well, the big piece of this new facility is that it's on the water.
Yeah.
And we have been dreaming of putting our museum and our collection on the water for so many years now. So you might arrive by water. You could actually paddle over, arrive at our docks, greeted by a beautiful willow tree and some wonderful white pines, and walk up to the new museum through the grounds, to arrive at perhaps a wood burning fireplace at the back of the museum that is just outside the cafe. And then you're coming inside to this beautiful warm wood interior that has a mass timber and cross laminated timber columns in it. So this like real rich wood feel. And this is the new home, the home of the canoes. And it does feel like that. It's a 5-acre property. And the big push of this beautiful building is that it allows us to completely transform our offerings, to go from a museum that is landlocked to being on the water. So we can now offer outdoor and experiential education programs. We can focus more on environmental literacy and stewardship right on the grounds.
Yeah.
And then we have a building that is purpose-built to house this wonderful collection that doesn't exist anywhere else in the world.
No, it is an amazing collection. And I think, like you're kind of hinting to, a lot of it's been in storage for years. And again, Jeremy took me into that storage, and it was just stunning to see what's there. And I'm just wondering, Jeremy, what are some of the favorite pieces of yours that have been now sort of rescued from storage and will be on display?
It changes every day. And frankly, it changed again today just because we were in the exhibition hall unwrapping some canoes because they are being installed into our major exhibitions that'll open with the new museum. And you reconnect with these incredible pieces, remember the stories. I'm drawn to this collection for the story and for the opportunity to learn through the stories that they may carry and also through the craftsmanship. You were asking about your way to the collection hall and what would I point out. I would have to stop if I was carrying on Carolyn's tour past the interior. My way into this, one of my favorite parts in this new museum is that the workshop spaces are right up front. They are right in the atrium area. They're part of that sort of public experience. And so perhaps my answer today would be, as we're walking along to the collection hall to spend some time with the amazing watercraft in the museum's collection, there may be actually a canoe or a kayak being built in our workshop.
Ah, fantastic.
Right there at the moment, there's a canoe maker in residence or a kayak builder in residence making a kayak. And that may actually be my favorite canoe of that moment because we've met so many people.
Yeah.
Across this country, coast to coast to coast, canoes and kayaks have been made for the new museum's new exhibit offering. These are brand new boats with a lot of energy and a lot of enthusiasm behind them to help the museum tell as diverse and complex and rich, a range of perspectives and stories in it. And each one has been carefully, I think, crafted to bring those messages to the museum to reach a much wider audience. So,
yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
Can we give a shout out to that kayak maker? Who's that working there now?
One of the kayaks that we're just about to bring over that'll be on exhibit. It was just flown down from Mihailovice. It was made by Robert Como and Asivak Arnakuk Baril. In Iqaluit, who are with the Kayakut Society. And so they've been promoting kayak knowledge and Inuit maritime traditions in Nunavut for quite some time. And they've made a Gourmet style, a South Baffin style kayak that'll be sort of their point position in the exhibition hall to share their stories and knowledge to a wider audience.
Carolyn, is there a particular canoe or two there that tells a story that you love?
Oh my gosh. I don't know where to begin. Sometimes the things that I love about the canoes are the way people connect with them when they're on display. And I've often found that in the old museum here at 910, some of the watercraft that people really connect with are usually really different. The Birchburg canoes, specifically, my background's more working with youth and school programs. So the Birchbark canoes have always been an area that people are gravitating to. And I love it when kids start to realize that this canoe, all of its parts come from nature and they can be found in the forest and that they are harvested and cared for and put together and make this beautiful watercraft that is resilient and infinitely repairable and yet beautiful and wonderful to paddle. Moving one around in the exhibit hall this morning, actually, and it's this big, beautiful birch bark canoe that just lovely to be maneuvering it and lifting it and carrying it. Pretty great.
Yeah. You know, I'm up here on Meech Lake, just north of Ottawa, which is Bill Mason territory. And of course, there's a quite a famous Mason canoe, I think, in your collection too.
There is. We're just installing the millwork surfaces that will position Bill's famous red chestnut prospector proudly in the exhibit hall. It's certainly an iconic canoe to many Canadians, and it's an important one here at the Canoe Museum. It's a perfect example to support the theme of the exhibit that it's going to be. And right next to a large canvas wall tent, which is an immersive experience in its own right in the exhibits, it's sort of fitting. It's not quite Bill's famous campfire tent design, but it makes it also an amazing film theater because we're showing the Real Paddle Film Festival in this wall tent. So you can just flop out and go to places you may or may never get to in your life and just do a deep dive into the incredible world that a canoe or a kayak can take you to.
That sounds amazing. That sounds amazing. Yeah, he stuck with the canvas tents well past the point where he probably should have, didn't he?
You know, and Bill's canoe is one of many that has so many scars and creaks and cracks in the hull and repairs. And I think for me, that's magic. When it's not, people think of museum quality, I think, often as what would that mean? Perfect mint condition and maybe sanitary and sterile. And there's nothing more evocative as an old part member of the family pointed at both ends used for getting you out and family out on a river that carries the scars of that journey and the love and care to put it back together and keep it going.
What is the oldest piece you're going to be showing in the museum?
You know, interestingly, although the museum cares for the largest collection of paddled watercraft in the world, compared to some museums internationally, it's a relatively young collection. And our oldest canoes are in the 2.5 centuries old window, right?
Which is, I mean, it's impressive considering the materials they're probably made of from back then, you know?
Yeah, exactly. These are ephemeral because they're so large and left to the weather, they just do slowly work themselves apart, certainly the older ones. Dugout canoes sometimes turn up in the bottoms of lakes and rivers, and they can be thousands of years old. They keep turning up every year, and it's amazing when another one's found. Ideally, when people see these, they get a geotag or a geolocation of it, but they leave it where it is because if it survived 2.5 millennia at the bottom of a lake. Pulling it out of the water is the quickest way to ruin a piece like that, but knowing where it is might be very helpful down the road to understand ancient waterways. In our collection, there's one birch bark canoe that is about 250 years old that turned up in a family barn, an outbuilding in Cornwall in UK.
In the UK? Wow.
Yeah. And it was not from the UK, of course. It's a birch bark canoe, and it had been brought back during the American Revolution. A family connection, a lieutenant colonel had served in a British regiment that faced off with the revolutionaries at the time at Quebec City. And so this canoe somehow, and for some reason, ended up back in the UK, in Cornwall, where it had been lovingly cared for 2.5 centuries, and it was brought here. And we've still not managed to determine which community this canoe came from. And so there's work yet to be done on firming that up and making contact and introducing ourselves in this canoe, more importantly, to that community. But here it rests with us. Right near the entrance to the collection hall is a rugged old dugout canoe that was pulled out of the mud near a dock in Kinmount, about an hour, 45 minutes north of Peterborough. Cottager was putting in a new dock, thought they'd found a log that needed to come out, but it was pointed at both ends and hollowed out in the middle. And there it's been, and it's probably in the 250-year-old range.
Amazing.
So incredible histories just in the landscape everywhere that poke up and show You know, people have been here for centuries or millennia, and this has been the means of getting around.
Well, that's it. And Carolyn, it goes back to you talking about the birch bark canoe. You know, this is all goes back to the birch bark and the dugout canoe. And of course, that's all of our indigenous brothers and sisters in this country who, you know, were using those for millennia before we got here. So how are you honoring that history in the museum?
You can't look at a canoe or kayak without grounding yourself in the knowledge that this is a watercraft that is of indigenous origin, and specifically not just here on in this country known as Canada, but also all around the world. And so for us, it's honoring the stories, it's honoring the community. We've made a great effort in the last number of years to reconnect with communities and builders with the watercraft that we will be putting on display, and to build a much better relationship. And this is on top of years of relationship building the museum's had with builders and with communities whose watercraft we care for. And we think of it as that, as we are currently caring for these watercraft and wanting to do right by those relationships. And so it is a relationship. It's an open dialogue as to how they should be looked after, what stories should be told, and sort of where the canoe museum's at. And so the new museum has been the new museum work, whether that's exhibit development, whether that's governance, program development as well. All of this is tied to how the organization is starting to work more actively and building on that foundation that we've had for years. But with such a huge project, with so much energy and time, it's been a really big part of the work that we've been doing.
Can you give an example of an exhibit there that is directly tied to a First Nations community you've been working with?
All of them. Frankly, there is an overall approach. We have six so-called permanent or long-term exhibits and a temporary exhibit as well. And each is the exploration of a broad theme. And our approach has been to take a big idea, whether it's pushing the limits or how it's made or global families of the canoe, for instance. And we bring together people of all backgrounds and explore this idea, tease it out, and bring different perspectives to perhaps a familiar idea or the same moment in time even. And we find that very fertile ground because there are such different perspectives on such familiar things, even right down to what is a canoe. We've certainly had a lot of feedback on that. And so through this approach, we've reached out coast to coast to coast, and rather than the museum shaping that narrative so much, we've guided the conversation perhaps, but they're showing their perspectives. We've hired, in many cases, in community, working with museums or individuals who work within their community to seek out elders and language speakers and knowledge holders and builders, as Carolyn mentioned, to bring that in. And so interesting that we hope all of them will join us for opening day, or in fact for a sneak preview just before. But we've been working together now for months and months, and they know what the panels will look like, where their stories are presented, and they'll have seen the last proofs and so on. So this is really a space created for them to share their words, their language, their imagery, their stories. And goodness, it means, and we've done that with all people of all backgrounds through the exhibits. Yeah, there's a balanced approach, if you will. So there are about 116 canoes and kayaks in the exhibit, and we've brought in a parity, an equal representation of indigenous canoes and kayaks and watercraft from people of all backgrounds in that space, and therefore their stories. So it's been a big project, very exciting, and it certainly has been vastly enriched by the involvement of so many people.
Part of that work, David, because it does weave its way into our commitments. So a commitment for reciprocity, and that there is some of the work that we're doing is truly having an impact in communities. But then also we've heard loud and clear when we've been talking with individuals about what would be the most impactful, having actually commissioning some builds that are happening with youth and with elders, language workshops, presenting language, the local dialect of the Indigenous language of this territory is presented on all of our main text panels when you come into the exhibition space, but also throughout the whole museum. So that you're, again, a visitor coming to the museum is seeing Indigenous language right here at the Canoe Museum. A lot of this work has been listening and learning and making sure that we're doing everything we can on this project so that there's voice. People are hearing their own voice. They're seeing themselves in the museum. And this place doesn't become another place where our belongings are housed. It becomes an extension of their home, a place where people can come and see their belongings and know that this is a welcoming place, that they want to bring them down and smudge them and care for them. They can. We've built Nice. This whole facility so it can be, there can be traditional care practices done, whether it's in the collection hall, the exhibit hall, or in the main event space. So we've tried to do as much as we can. We've been following the lead of really wonderful people that have been helping us along the way. And we have so many wonderful helpers and trying to be as open as we can. But we're learning and we're trying to do what feels right and what we can with the time and the money we have. But we have incredible potential to do things in a way that are going to have a much bigger impact than if we didn't try. And so it's been a big part of what we've been doing. And it feels really good.
What is it about the canoe? I mean, we're talking about a history that goes back millennia, and it's still a popular, super popular vessel. People love canoeing. You know, it's a recreational vehicle more than a working vehicle now for most, but like it just carries on. And what is it about that?
I think that's the coolest thing about the canoe, the kayak. It can be so many things to so many different people. I mean, it may be livelihood and subsistence. It might be recreational fishing. It could be a canoe trip where you are really connecting with the environment around you. And that's healing for many people. That's such a busy world right now. I know for myself, that is whether it's a solo canoe trip or whether it's a trip with family and friends, those moments of really stepping away from the busyness and having some time to just be moving slowly through space and trying to be as low impact on the earth as possible.
Mm. There is something about the pace of it too, though, isn't there? Yeah. I totally agree.
It's just, and just being on water. Like there's the mix of water and trees and sky and all the beings around you. It's a pretty great spot.
It's the pace, Dave, and it's also the exposure, the vulnerability that you have. There's something humbling about that. That is different than when you're sitting in an enclosed vehicle. You are exposed to the weather in most cases, and you're under your own steam. And moving at that pace that you do, it's quite humbling. And there's a lot of time to process. It takes a lot of exertion, and you are highly attuned and aware. And I think that the opportunities to make connections at that journey, at that pace, are very high as you consider the world around you and where you're smallness in the midst of it all. And yet there's the water closing behind you as if you were never there as the canoe passes over it. So it's not often in our life that we are so light on the earth as we travel, and it's humbling and empowering all at the same time.
So tell me, you're on a lake finally, right? Mm. This is the thing.
Yay!
Very exciting.
Woohoo!
So what does that mean in terms of people actually getting out on the water from the museum?
Being in the museum is going to be wonderful, but hopefully we've done our job. We will judge how well we've done our job by how many people get out and sort of make their own connections and get onto the water themselves. We've built two docks so that we can have accessibility, so people can get down to the water and get into a canoe or a kayak, regardless of abilities. And then either if, I mean, if they are a paddler, then they can rent a canoe or kayak from we will be doing rentals. So we'll be able to rent something from us and get out onto the lake. If they are feeling a little more unsure about paddling, we'll be offering Voyager canoe tours guided on the lake as well. So again, getting people out, slowing down, experiencing this world, and maybe just getting a taste of what it is. And then hopefully they might do it again and do it again. And eventually it becomes part of their life.
That's like a big 30-foot canoe. Or what is that going to look like?
We have a 26-foot North canoe and a 36-foot Montreal canoe as well.
And we have a few extras, 20 that are 24 feet up to 39. So we have a small armada.
And are some of them birch bark, or they're modified, or what are they?
Those are all composite hulls. Yeah. But we do have a historic handling fleet. We do have several signature canoes that have been made or have been restored expressly for the purpose of getting people out for a very special occasion in some more historic hulls, including birch bark. Yeah.
So you guys could be a launching point for some trips or something too, couldn't you, potentially?
We'll be starting back up with our summer camp, day camp programming.
Yeah.
And we're imagining already that we now are going to be able to have trips start and end at the museum, which is wild to think about the impact of that. And really, I think from a programming point of view, to connect youth, so if they're outside and they're doing an activity like canoeing, and then to bring them inside and to connect with the sort of the authentic craft and understand the context and the history and the people that's within this canoeing cultures is, I think, going to be a really powerful educational experience for a lot of people.
We've had for decades now people coming in from south of the border internationally or from across Canada, arriving in Ontario, heading out on canoe trip and made the Canoe Museum either a destination heading in or coming out dirty and greasy and coming off. But it's sort of part of that experience. You know, it's been a remarkable addition to their very real experiences in the bush. And I think, you know, that will certainly continue with the new home. But we have a real opportunity, I think, now being on the water to help people who are less familiar with the importance of the canoe historically and culturally in this country to understand what is this all about. But also, if you've never been canoeing, we have a perfect gateway facility and campus now to cultivate skills and competency, and I think the empowerment to then try for yourself. If you've never been out in the bush, out on the incredible landscape that we have across this country, in a canoe, this is going to be the perfect place to begin that journey. And our staff will get you out there, show you the ropes, and set you out on your way.
Can you just give me a canoe for each maybe century that you've got there on display for the last, say, three centuries, like that stand out?
There are six dugout canoes that in our collection that came out of the bottoms of lakes and rivers. Five of them we have determined were, they show use of steel tools for various reasons. If we look very carefully at the tool patterns on them and so on and so forth, or the repairs, there is one that has no markings whatsoever, and the shape is remarkably different. And I suspect it was not used for moving the pigs from the farm out to the island in the summer in the early centuries of newcomers to this land, and I'd love to know where and what story is it might have told, and if it was used for moving trade goods or food in terracotta pots, or what its story was, because it takes us to such canoe traditions going that stretches back millennia. Absolutely.
So let's go to 1800s now.
This is a real head scratching question, Dave. That I think 1800s, it could be a number. I think there are some very early canoes that were made here in Peterborough. The Canoe Museum is located on a river here in Peterborough that was an ancient canoe route. We are on Mississauga, Michisagi territory here, and it was an important river route north-south that drains into Lake Rice Lake, ultimately Lake Ontario. While there are many birch bark canoes and kayaks and dugout canoes that are from that century, I think an interesting one would be one of the very early board and batten wideboard canoes that are in our collection that take us to the formative years of wooden canoe manufacturing for a much wider audience. And this was a process of getting canoes influenced by other industry, but repeatable in larger numbers and being shipped around the world. And it was a time when canoe was still used as a work boat by people of backgrounds right across this country, all backgrounds, but it was also transitioning into a recreational market and starting to hit the romance of urban populations who were first discovering, you know, how amazing it is to paddle your own canoe, I suppose. And so Peterborough was a manufacturing epicenter starting in the late 1800s, shipping internationally. And they were true works of art. They were exquisite craftsmanship. And I could point to a dozen in our collection, one of which was made over a dugout canoe that was pulled from the mud. So it's a segue to my first option from the previous century. It was a canoe that had been assembled in pieces, stretched over a dugout canoe that had been pulled from the mud. And so thus beginning that kind of repeat cycle.
Nice, yeah.
And what about the 1900s, Carolyn? Do you have one?
Well, I think the canoe that I was thinking of, maybe it is late 1800s, early 1900s, but the big, beautiful Northwest Coast New Chelmeth canoe. And this is a big, beautiful whaling canoe that is such a major fixture in grounding the dugout canoe cultures that we're fortunate to be able to have a canoe like that in our care. That would be late 1800s, I think, 1890, yeah. Somewhere in there.
Probably used in the 1900s, though. So we can.
There we
can
go.
We can give you that.
Oh my God, I love you. You're awesome. Yes.
Nicely done. We've had the incredible fortune to be working with Giselle Martin, who's a New Chelmeth canoeing guide and knowledge holder out on the west coast of Vancouver Island, and this canoe originated from her territories. Her father, Joe Martin, is a legendary canoe builder still today, and we've had many conversations with him as well as Giselle, and they've brought such great content into the exhibit in association with this canoe. That's going to be a very impressive moment for guests when they come in and see that big, beautiful canoe and the stories and language that are accompanying it in the exhibits.
I'm guessing 21st century is something it was made on site, probably, right? Is it?
Yeah. I was like, we're all ready for that one.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
So one of the builds, and this sort of goes back to a little bit of fascination with the whole birch bark canoe manufacturing, but in 2017, here at the Canoe Museum, we hosted a canoe build with Chuck Commanda. And this was really neat because it was birch bark canoe build with Chuck Commanda. And
so absolutely legendary birch bark canoe maker. Like,
absolutely, yes. And Chuck, we've been working really closely with Chuck since then. And this was one of his first builds. And he's been, and this was a real launch point for many, many builds. And he's a good friend of ours. And this canoe build, it was sort of neat because that was the first canoe build with Chuck that I've been involved in. And then last summer, so this past summer, 2023, at our new museum location, he had done a canoe build with a high school group of high school students here in Peterborough. And he texted or called us and asked if he could come over and launch the canoe at our new site. And he was the first birch bark canoe to be launched at our brand new location with Chuck, which was Chuck 2017 and Chuck 2023. And Oh, yeah, it was just so excited. Lovely. Yeah, it was really nice.
Yeah,
so,
amazing that there's youth involved, like kids involved in helping them build that thing too.
Well, that was the magical thing about the 2017 build is that we were running virtual programs at that time. And mm-hmm. so we had so many different school kids that were joining Chuck for part of the build virtually, remotely. And it was really neat for a lot of kids to learn about the different materials, how things are built. And for some, really having that wow moment of like, holy, people are still doing this. And that's a big moment. So yeah, that was really neat. That'd be my fave.
I don't want to keep you guys long because I know you're very busy still having this all come together. I ask everyone on this podcast for a favorite place in Canada. I'm going to narrow it down to a favorite place on the water you've been in Canada.
I have a really, really special spot in my heart for Quetico Provincial Park, mm-hmm. Northwest Ontario. Yeah. And spent many summers working and paddling there, and went back there with my family a number of years ago. And yeah. Beautiful place.
What's that landscape like?
Oh my goodness. Rocks and trees and water and big sky. Big, beautiful sky, lots of red pine, lots of white pine, and big expanse.
It was really land built for the canoe, right? I mean, that's why the canoe exists, that territory right there.
Absolutely.
Short portages.
Exactly. Yeah, all hail the short portage. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yes, let's hear for the short portage.
Yeah.
Portage if you're in North, if you're
oh,
up
yeah.
there.
In Boundary yeah. Waters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you, Jeremy?
I was just thinking, gosh, so many, and just because of family conversations last night, this is top of brain, Dave, but at 14, we paddled the Des Moines River for the first time, and it was a formative experience for me. I think probably there's a line drawn from that to where I've been working here for quite some time, just had a very lasting impression on me. So we'll go with that. If it isn't going to be, well, I guess the cliche of where I'm going to paddle where I'm going to paddle next would be the tempting one, but I know that's often probably said to you. So.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll take the Des Moines, pick any spot along it. It might be, it might be at the top of Big Chute because for the previous few hours, my father, who I was canoeing with, told me, okay, this is a tricky set we're going to run, which, of course, if anybody knows it, it would have been certain death. Only thing you could do is go down it in a huge squash ball. But
But that's a long portage.
That's a long one.
I've done that one. I paddled the Des Moines when I was 14 as well. Did you? Then I paddled again 2 years ago, and it was just as thrilling the second time and as an adult. Yeah. It is a beautiful, beautiful river, yeah, and so accessible to so many people too. Well, I want to thank you both. This has been a lovely conversation, and congratulations on an incredible job.
Thank you, David.
Beautiful, beautiful museum, beautiful site, and I think it's going to be a wonderful place for people to gather and learn.
If you're coming this way, just let us know.
I'll be there. You bet.
Okay, good.
Okay, well, thank you both.
Oh my gosh, thank you, David.
Thank you, David. Great to see you.
And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope that inspires some paddling adventures. If you want more canoe storytelling, we've got a bunch of great canoe-focused episodes in our archives, which are completely free to access at cangio.ca/podcast. And remember, if you like this podcast, please tell a friend about it. If you can tell them in person, even better. You can also rate and review us where you listen and subscribe so you don't miss any upcoming episodes. Until next time, when we'll explore again, paddle in hand, I'm David McGuffin.
I think right now we're enjoying very much looking back at the Earth, and it's just a fantastic experience, and I just can't wait to get back and start telling people.
We left Simpson about June 10th with a fur brigade consisting of a number of yacht boats, each manned by 10 voyageurs.
For us Inuit, it means that Inuit oral history is very strong.
And we flew low over every inch of the country that could be. We were hoping that he would fire at us.
Oh, I guess 160 dives or so. There are shrimp fish swimming around outside. It's just fabulous here.
Well, I'm a first for Canada. Thank you.